Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law. With your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast, going public refers to a private company initial public offering, also known as IPO. There were 190 IPOs in 2018. Companies with market capitalization, get this, of over $50 million plus. The largest IPO in the United States in 2018 was Alibaba Group Holding, which raised over $21 billion. Alibaba Group is a Chinese e-commerce company that is becoming a publicly traded company and owned entirely by the public. Today, we're going to be talking about the trials and tribulations of going public, featuring attorney Philip Magri, who also for 6 years was an assistant general counsel to Donald Trump's Trump Entertainment Resorts Incorporated. Philip's passion is taking new companies or businesses that have been around for generations public. He's going to, you know, pull the veil so we can see what the workings is to do that. But first, I'd like to welcome the legal panel for today's program. Gary Singer, good afternoon.
Hey, Phil, how are you doing today?
You're looking good, Gary. You're keeping that weight off, too.
Oh, thanks, Phil.
I wish I could. and our newest attorney legal panelist, Eric Yankwit. Good afternoon.
Good to see you here on the radio as well.
Always a pleasure. I want to remind our listeners you can go to Facebook Live. Just Google Facebook Legal News and Review, especially on Thursdays. We're here most Thursdays, but at 5:30 to 7 p.m. You can watch the program, but more importantly, also see past programs. And you'll see we're recording today at Kelly Ustall Building in their mock courtroom. You know, talk about resources. If you've been injured from someone else's negligence, just go to justiceforall.com. It's that simple, justiceforall.com. Also welcoming our listeners on 96.9 FM, 103.9, 740 AM, and of course our loyal listeners nationally on iHeart, TuneIn, and iRadio Now. Philip Magri from Magri Law Firm, welcome to Legal News and Review.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's certainly good to see you again. I don't know if our audience remember, you've been on here before.
Yes.
And
yes,
we got some interesting emails on that. Philip, I'm going to start with one question that was important to me that we talked about. Why do businesses usually go public?
Well, that's a great question, and there are a myriad of reasons why a company wants to go public, but I guess the primary reason is access to capital. They want to raise money, they want to grow their business, they want to give employees an incentive to work hard, because, you know, stock becomes liquid. And so it's basically about a company raising money and attracting new investors to fund projects.
So if I have a valued employee like Giovanni,
yes,
and I go public, I can give him stocks.
Absolutely. You can do a stock option plan or a stock incentive plan. You can restricted stock. You can do a registration statement. So when he wants to go sell that stock, you know, you give him skin in the game, so to speak.
Right.
So he has an incentive to make the company grow, because as the company grows, his stock will grow.
But I still have to pay him a check.
Yes.
Oh, well.
I think he's about to ask for a raise now.
I'm telling you. Uh-oh.
Good for you, Giovanni.
No, he's responsible for the success of the program.
So why companies go, but, you know, at what point would it make sense for a company to go public?
Companies go public, you know, sometimes you have companies with revenue and they want to go public because they want to go in acquisition mode. And when a company goes public, they're going to, they can use their stock as part of a purchase price to acquire other companies. So they may want to do that, or they may want to raise the visibility of their companies. Basically, they want to create a liquidity event or an exit strategy for their prior investors. Usually, investors who come in when the company's not public will expect a return.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, you know, well, you know, so how do I get my money back, or how do I make money on my investment? It's by going public and having an exit strategy or a liquidity event. But companies, you know, as far as the stage, you know, you see a lot of companies that don't have revenues, they go public. Depends on the industry, whether it's biotech. A lot of biotech companies don't even have revenues because they have IP. They have, you know, assets they can value, and, you know, they have I guess, a roadmap on how to get profitable. And so they'll raise money because maybe they want to do human clinical trials to prove the efficacy of their drugs and go through the FDA process. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to be an Alibaba or a Facebook to have revenue to begin with. A lot of companies will be pre-revenue. And they'll go public that way.
Well, it seems like a lot of companies are pre-revenue, but it's a lot of smaller companies too. It's not just the Facebooks.
Absolutely.
What about bonds? Why would you go public versus raising through a bond, or you know, asking to borrow money?
Well, that's a good question.
Because you got to give up your equity when you.
Yeah, absolutely. When you give up, yeah, you do give. I mean, there's more. I think it's more attractive. I think people expect. You know, you can give a bond. Sometimes people do that when they're private. Sometimes companies will do that as a secondary offering. Or they'll do a unit offering, which means that when they go public, they'll give out a share of common stock and a warrant. A lot of times companies, when they want to raise money in the beginning, especially because it's riskier, what they'll do is they'll give out a bond with a coupon, so it's guaranteed. Okay. But I think the way the capital markets are structured, most people want stock. I think stock is more attractive in the market.
It's sexy. I get it.
It's definitely sexy. Yes, it's all about sales, right?
It is impressive.
Yeah, but most people probably, I don't know the statistics. Maybe you do, but I got to imagine that a lot of companies go public and burn. You know, a few people get in back, or certain backers get paid pretty well, but most people who invest, plus a lot of people in the companies, get pretty heavily burnt, right?
It's, it depends, when the market is. I mean, there are a lot of smaller companies that they do go public and, the stock doesn't take off the way they anticipated to, unfortunately. And, so I guess you could say the investors get burned, but that's, that is the risk of capitalism.
Well, the new investors get burned, not the old investors. The old investors get paid when it initially goes
true,
public.
Right, the new investors,
and they get
right.
to sell, right?
In Boca Raton, Will Chamberlain's, only one restaurant. I used to like it going there. It was cool. You had a TV in the booth and everything else. It's actually all the memorabilia. It was great. But the problem is when they went public and they raised all this millions of dollars, they only had one restaurant. And it was like a wildfire in one day where they opened up with the stock went up, millions of dollars, then all of a sudden, they only have one restaurant. What are you doing? And then they had to close the IPO.
Yeah. No, so I'm not really familiar with the terms of that, but sometimes right. I suspect companies raise money. You have to look at the use of proceeds. Where is my money going? Is it going to pay off debt? Is it going to grow the company? Sometimes people get caught up in the glamour of the IPO. They think, it's a celebrity, so it's got to be worth it. But you don't know where their money's
going. What page is that on E-Trade? the people who are buying the stocks, there are sophisticated, obviously, business investors that invest. But you look at even popular IPOs like Facebook. I remember Facebook, right? I'm not a stock guy. I'm a dirt guy. I like things I can touch, right? But I just don't have time to stop. And my hat off to people who trade in stock. I think that's good magic, right? But one of my guys talked me into buying some Facebook. So I did and immediately lost half my money.
Right.
Now, fortunately, I forgot to sell it. Now it's worth a lot more. But the valuation from these, mega smart people, right, that make this IPO, it was, if it ended the end of the first day, half of what it was worth in the beginning of the first day, someone screwed up.
Yeah, so you have a lot of dynamics going into that. You have, the market. There are a lot of different factors that go into a stock's valuation, and I guess in the roller coaster that it takes. But as far as disclosure, when companies do go public, they have to go to the SEC, and they have to file registration statements, which will list basically everything. It's an open kimono kind of thing. All the risk factors that are involved, where the money's going, their capitalization.
So it's transparency they may not be
used to. Well,
but
it's not. That's kind of my point, right? So, number one, that's got to be hard on the company going. They got to open up the robe, right? So I get that. But realistically, who reads it? It's the may contain nuts.
The investment bankers.
Or made in a factory that has nuts in it. Like, if you have allergies, everything says it, so it becomes meaningless. So if you look at one of these disclosure statements, if you're one of these regular folk that, are regular, you don't read this crap. No one reads this crap unless you're in the biz, in which case, that's who this is being done for.
Well,
anyway.
They're being advised.
But it's
Gary.
Awful. It's off. It's yeah. How many weeks of school is that? It's also, that's where the money comes from, but that's not the people driving the bus, right? So you're using a lot of unsophisticated people's money when you go public to fund what many sophisticated people want you to see. Because, like, you, I'm sure, as a smart securities attorney, which I have every respect for, too hard for me, right? Read this stuff.
Well, I read it and I also write it. So, yeah, I definitely.
Anyone else?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, so the SEC years ago came across this legal doctrine, which basically said plain English. We basically told everyone to basically stop with the legalese. Because there, you know, years ago, if you looked at these prospectuses, no one could understand what the heck they were saying. It was the paragraph, the sentences were
the print is very small also.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that. Half the time, I don't understand what Gary Singer's saying.
That's because you're slurring. I'm slurring, Phil.
No, no. So they did. So, you know, there has been a huge movement to go towards plain English. But I agree. Do people, does the average investor read all the stuff? I would say no. But
well, the average investor, average anybody doesn't read anything. They don't read the real estate contract. Right. They don't read the tax return. They don't read anything before
they sign it. So
the
question is that if the company, you know, these are the laws. So if the company wants to raise money and it's obeying the law that's written, that's currently written, and the investor doesn't read them, then the question is, well, who's really at fault if the investor loses his money? If he's just going on a whim and he's just throwing his money around like crazy without doing any due diligence, then the question really becomes, well, you know, everything's a risk. Anyone who knows anything about the stock market knows that everything's a risk.
I do real estate, right?
Okay.
I can't tell you how many times people say, well, I want to cancel the contract. Like, I don't want the house anymore.
Right, and they don't want to read the contract.
It doesn't mean anything. It's a piece of paper. Come on. So again, you know, and don't get me wrong, I'm not bashing what you do. I've actually originally wanted to be a securities lawyer, and it just looked too hard, so I went into real estate. I clerked for Marilyn Kane at Nova, who's a brilliant securities lawyer, and I had to make money and work and stuff, so I couldn't go for my LLM. So I have every respect for it, but you know, realistically, under the current system, no one reads this crap, and no one believes it, even if they do, just like a contract. Just like when you go on your cruise ship, do you read the 47-page, you know,
disclaimers
thing,
and the
you
rest?
No, you get hurt, and then you go see David Singer, my not-cousin, to be able to sue him, or some of our guests to be able to sue the cruise ship because it's 47 pages. So plain English is good, and frankly, going public is good. And if you take the risk and you don't read it, too bad on you, is my personal opinion. But there's also a counter-argument that this sort of thing, you know, can be hurtful to non-sophisticated investors, and maybe IPOs should be more limited to sophisticated investors.
Well, that is a good point. But Gary, have you heard about Jumpstart Our Business Startups, also known as the Jobs Act?
I already said I'm a real estate lawyer, Phil.
I know.
That's why
I asked Philip to come here, because I think this is interesting.
I'm not bashing you. I think it's cool.
It's about testing the waters on Wall Street.
There's a flip side to this, too, I think people
need to
know.
There's an argument made the other way. If you limit the market to only, quote-unquote, sophisticated investors, as you say, then there's a whole like class system where you only create money. People with money can make money, and everyone who's not fortunate to make money is kind of stuck in not being able to invest.
Otherwise known as the U.S. economy.
Or IPO.
Well, right now, for private companies, they have that you have to be an accredited investor, which you have to meet certain income thresholds in order to invest. So there's some kind of protection for those folks. But as far as public markets, you know, we can make that argument for any area of law whatsoever. As you said, if someone doesn't want to read a contract, they don't want to read a contract.
But the securities laws were originally put in place after the stock market crash for almost exactly some of the things that are happening again. And while I'm personally a libertarian and not a person who loves regulation, that scares me a little bit because you see what happens in some of these IPOs, like Alibaba for that matter, or others where, you know, there's not a great... So how does... Now, I understand you know how to, you know, write them and read them, but how does the average... What part of that disclosure look at? What do they do to... How do people protect themselves?
Well, you know, hold that question.
No.
Sure. Yeah, we have to take a quick break.
Come on, it was getting good.
Well, let's...
I don't want to go to bed, Dad.
You're listening to Legal News and Review, and we're talking about businesses going public. It's a really cool segment as well. We're with Philip Magri. Did I do justice to your last name?
Yes, perfect.
Okay, great, great. And when we come back, we're going to answer that question as well. And plus, you're going to explain to us what Jumpstart Our Business Startups or the Jobs Act actually means, and is it truly testing the waters without the risk? We'll be right back.
Do you need an attorney? Call someone you can trust. The Broward County Bar Association, a not-for-profit organization, was founded in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism, as well as to provide necessary legal services throughout South Florida. The Broward County Bar Association, 3,000 members strong, has attorney members that work throughout the entire state of Florida, as well as nationally and internationally. Remember, the Broward County Bar Association is a referral you can count on. Call Call the Broward County Bar Association at 954-764-8310 for all your legal needs. A referral you can count on. 954-764-8310. Or contact online at browardbar.org. Non-lawyer spokesperson.
Welcome back to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Award of Excellence from the Florida Bar. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go online to belegalbuzz.com. Once again, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
Legal News and Review is back on the air along with
Gary Singer
and
Eric Yankwit,
two well-vetted attorneys. And we're speaking to Philip Mockery. Philip is an attorney that specializes or focuses his practice on bringing companies public. That's actually his passion. It doesn't matter if you're a new company or you've been around for generations. You got to stay tuned to this. And what I would like to know is testing the Wall Street waters first. And we were talking about Jumpstart Our Business Startups, the Jobs Act.
Yes.
What actually is that, and how would that help me with my business going public?
Yeah, great question. So Obama, in response to, I guess, the 2008 financial crisis and the freezing up of the markets, wanted to create more opportunity for smaller companies to kind of raise money. So the Jobs Act came into play in 2012, and it was rolled out slowly. But there were a lot of great things in there that actually made it easier for companies to raise money, whether privately or publicly. Now, privately, the company wants to raise money. It used to be very prohibitive. It couldn't really solicit or advertise under 506 Reg D.
Is that called the quiet period?
Well, yeah. Well, quiet period is more about before you go public. But when you want to raise money privately and you couldn't be selling restricted stock, you couldn't advertise or solicit. So under Obama's tutelage, said, hey, you know what? Let's allow this. So Congress split 506, which said no, to two parts, and then created something where companies can now advertise and advertise their private offerings through a funding portal, and allows people, accredited investors, to kind of see what's out there and whether it wants to invest.
So this is a confidential process then?
Well, no, not the 506C. 506C is not confidential, but it is limited to accredited investors. You can go on to lots of different websites and see private placements that are available right now for if you want to invest, if you qualify. And then also on the public side, it enacted Reg A plus. It's Reg A because Reg A was always there, but they made it Reg A plus. They called it, which allowed companies to raise money, go public, called mini IPOs, and they would do it on an offering circular, an offering statement, and not the traditional way of doing an S-1, which is a very long, extensive disclosure document that's got to get through the SEC and stuff like that. The Reg A is shorter. It requires less financial disclosure. There's two tiers. One's audited, one's not audited. So it's a lot easier for companies to raise money if they want to. And also to test the waters, which allows companies to see if there's any interest, first of all, in terms of going public.
So, Philip, when you say a mini IPO, is that like on a different exchange from like the Dow stock market, or like what do you mean?
No, this Reg A plus, they called it a mini IPO because it was aimed for smaller companies, and also a lot of the companies, a couple of them actually have gone on the New York Stock Exchange and some on NASDAQ.
Okay.
But a lot of them end up going on the OTCQB, which is, the OTC markets.
That's the smaller stock.
The smaller, okay. Exactly, yeah. But so, there's two tiers, and one tier is up to $20 million, and the other tier is up to $50 million.
Wait, so companies under $20 million can go public?
Well, no, companies who want to raise $20 million.
Oh, okay.
But a lot of times Reg A is used by companies that don't even have revenues.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it depends on the industry. You find a lot of biotech companies don't have revenues. They have great assets or IP, and they have they need the money to raise money to do more studies. So they
haven't sold anything yet, but they have workers, they have ideas.
Yes, they're still in the R&D, or they're going to start clinical trials and stuff like that. So they have people in place, and they have the drug. They have some kind of IP in place, some intellectual property, some licenses. They're trying to get the drug through the FDA.
I imagine there must be some scrutiny over the management of the company.
Absolutely, there always is. I mean, in a disclosure document, you've got to give basically who your management team is, their titles. You've got to give a bio, So who are these people? You know, give us a bio of theirs, and then also disclose any kind of compensation arrangements you have with them. But management is key, especially when you have a company that doesn't have any revenue, because you're really relying.
I would think so.
Yeah, you're totally relying on the players. I mean, it's really kind of a leap of faith, if you will, in management, because if it's not the right team, then let's face it, if it's the greatest product in the world and it's not the right team,
right,
it's not going to go anywhere.
So they probably have private investors at that point to even get them to the point where they can do one of these no-revenue IPOs.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So companies, a company grows, usually, you know, there's inception, you create a company, and then you'll start doing funding, and usually that's all private. You'll go through, you know, various stages of funding. You go through seed financing, family and friends round, and you go, if you're lucky, you go to a VC, you get venture capital, you start doing,
okay. Right.
And then you get to a point where you're ready to go public. And so then you'll either go through public or traditional way, which is, you know, you do a form S-1, they call it, and it's a long process. You got to get years of financial statements ready, and you have an underwriter, you know, broker-dealer, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, and it's a big, long process, and that could take up to like 180 days, not longer. But this Reg A plus is a mini IPO in the sense that it's faster and there's less financial disclosure. Instead of 3 years, you do 2 years financial disclosure. If you do the tier one, they don't even have to be audited financial statements. Which,
wow.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when you think about that, but they do. Yeah, so you have tier two, which is up to $50 million, and those people tend to go onto the New York Stock Exchange and NASDAQ.
So the cost of going public then for those tier one or Reg A light, or I guess.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what to call it, but the easy way, right? The easy form is a more cost benefit. I mean, it's not going to cost so much for the accountant if it doesn't have to be audited.
Yeah,
and
I would think. Yes, absolutely.
Less rules and regs, it's less money for the lawyer fees and the rest. And
yeah, it's totally. It's totally a lot less money if you don't have to pay an auditor, obviously. And then even the school, I'm a lawyer, so I'm always in huge favor of hiring an attorney to do these disclosure documents, because you do have liability. I mean, you can be sued on disclosure if it's not correct or if it's
I would think so, especially greater than, because you're relying heavily on the management, especially if you have no income. Wait, I imagine a liability is a lot greater now.
Yes.
Yeah. Did you just say people try to do this without an attorney?
No. I don't know.
That'd be crazy.
I would try to. No, I'm sure there are people who think you don't have to, because, you know, people don't want to get attorneys. God. But
well, they can cut and paste from from
Google.
Facebook. Yeah. And yeah. Google.
Go to,
rest,
go to
right?
LegalZoom. See how far you
exactly.
Can.
Exactly.
How will I communicate my company's message to investors? I mean, I have a marketing chief, and he knows my customers and how to reach them, but. Do I need to hire someone whose experience of interacting with investors and of course the media,
like a promoter?
Well,
equivalent. Yeah.
Do someone to do PRs and do disclosure? Absolutely. I mean, that's really key, because a lot of times people they want to skimp on doing press releases or keeping the public abreast in terms of developments, and that's, I think, is always a big mistake. You really have to have the right people, and that really gets, again, the message out is key. But I do see a lot, you know, and they cost money. People don't want to spend money for PR, but unfortunately, you have to, because it's just, I've seen a lot of companies skimp on that, and even if they had a great product or a great company, it just, no one bought the product because no one knew about it.
I can imagine that matters a lot. What about a roadshow? I've heard something called a roadshow. Is that part of this process?
Yeah, so when a company is in the process of going public, you know, if it's, they have an underwriter, you know, they don't know, they haven't priced the deal yet. They don't know what they're going to sell the stock at. They have a range. You know, we're going to sell, you know, we're going to, because an underwriter, in theory, this is an S-1, you know, a traditional IPO, buys the stock from the company at a discount and then sells it. So, that's a firm commitment offering.
Wait, so when these companies go on IPO, someone besides the company already owns the stock?
No, so let's say Goldman Sachs is taking a company public and it's a firm commitment IPO. In theory, legally, what happens is that they sign an underwriting agreement, and the day of closing, Goldman Sachs buys the stock at a discount and then sells it to its customers. So there's kind of this.
To the more favored customers or to all their customers?
Well, that's an issue, because a lot of times people always complain, hey, I couldn't get into this IPO in time, because usually people who get in onto the IPO, there may be a pop in the stock. So unfortunately, that's something I think that is a problem. You have people who want to get in on a stock, you know, in the beginning, and they can't. They have to wait till it goes through the market, and then at that point, usually the price is high already, or the stock's gone up and gone down. So the underwriter will give a range. You know, they'll disclose a range, you know, between $5 and $7, and they'll do this roadshow. They'll go to sometimes they go, it's virtual, sometimes they fly around the country or this, even the world, and they go through and they talk to broker dealers and they talk to pension funds and stuff like that, people who would buy the stock. And from that, they get a range, they get an idea of what the stock should be worth or what they should price it at. So that's what a roadshow is, to kind of go out there and test
what the market is going to bear.
So it could exactly. fail. Like they can go on a roadshow and say, oh, we're not that interested as the people thought they would, so they decide not to do it. Or so is it like
that happens. That absolutely happens. People do all this stuff and they... You go out there and they realize it's not worth it, what they thought it was going to be worth, and they'll just kind of abandon the IPO. Maybe they'll postpone it because maybe market conditions have changed or something's changed with the company.
But what's the best way for someone to get in touch with you? If I'm a small business and I want to take my business to the next level, you have other things besides IPO ways to help build the business, don't you?
Sure. I help companies from inception to IPO. So I help, you know, everything with forming the company to...
Like an LLC.
Yeah, an LLC right. or C Corp, and then right. employment agreements, independent contractor agreements, licenses. I'll do resolutions, you know, corporate housekeeping, M&A. I do kind of all the stuff that's related to that.
Well, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, or they can, you know, find me on Facebook. I'm building a website, so if people go to my website, magrilaw.com, they're going to see, you know, coming. I want to be like a typical legal website. I'm trying to do something a little more creative than that. That's my next project.
And Magri is spelled M-A-G-R-I, just as it sounds.
M-A-G-R-I, correct.
Very good. Gary?
Well, I want to thank you, Philip. It's very interesting information. I didn't get to talk about it because we're out of time, but I actually almost took a company of mine public before the bust. The real estate bus. So I was just starting on a road show when everything fell apart in the world. But I want to thank you for being here. It's very interesting. Brings back bittersweet memories for me, but very interesting. I want to thank everyone else. Most importantly, thank our listeners. Be safe and
be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for legal news and review. Remember, be legal.